Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast. From the IV, the Matadors, you are on once again with your boy, Albie Shore. And as always, I got my right-hand man, Dylan Smythe, with me. What's up, Dil?
Oh, you know, just reacting to the last few days of Texas Tech news, kind of changed up our podcast schedule, but we have Jeremy here to tie it all together for us.
Jeremy Gillen, what is going on? Dylan always, like, introduces you randomly when I'm, like, ready to
bring I'm just keeping so you on your toes.
It's always, like, this awkward, yeah.
He just wants to do it nicely instead of any imaginary way you can bring me in that also burns me, very much becoming the next Jacob. I think you just want to find any way to bring me down before I get to going.
Jeremy's our Philo, yeah. Pilo.
God. Everybody's always got a Jerry.
Your name just happens to be closest.
That's true. And you go by J Germ. You actually don't even. You don't even have to keep the M in there. So Jer, we do have some big story that hit the airwaves. Wednesday morning, USA Today. Actually, Tuesday night is really when we first saw it. Was USA Today, it was their front page, was an article talking about Marlene Stallings, the head women's basketball coach, having a toxic culture. Wednesday morning, the article went live. We all got a chance to read it. About how the players were basically in a toxic culture, an abusive culture that dealt with verbal abuse, physical abuse, and even sexual abuse. Jerry, what was your first thought when you read the article?
It's Gary. Front page, Texas Tech, you never hope that that's the content. And so it was one of those moments I had no idea what I was reading until really another day to process it, but just horrible, man. Horrible that this would happen at our university. I mean, we talked pre-pod, you know, there's other universities when it happens to them, you think like, ah, that'd never happen here. But the reality is that it can happen anywhere. And so Texas Tech just unfortunately became the center of attention for probably the worst stuff to go on behind athletic department doors.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, we did talk a little pre-pod about that and the fact that it not only could happen anywhere, but the fan base reaction that was similar to, that's been similar to other places can also happen anywhere. Right, Dylan? So Dylan, what were your thoughts to that, you know, and to kind of what we talked about pre-pod as far as how the fan base reacted?
Yeah, I think, obviously if you actually went in and read the whole article, if you didn't come out angry, there's something wrong with you. I mean, it's clear based on what these 10 girls have said that what was happening at Texas Tech University in regards to the women's basketball program was not acceptable. So especially I think what's really tough is that you have two elements here. One's like the mental abuse and then the sexual abuse. And I think everyone's on board that, hey, the sexual abuse is absolutely unacceptable. But then there's a segment of the population that really doesn't understand mental health or doesn't care for mental health and just wants to call these girls soft. And it's really been grinding my gears the last few days on Twitter.
That's actually a really good point, you know, because I think like the easy one we want to compare this to is what happened with Billy Gillespie, right? I was on campus. I was at Tech at the time when the Billy Gillespie thing happened. And this, funny enough, I think everybody was on board with firing Billy Gillespie when it happened. This was worse, and this was worse in the not just running your players ragged and not just, you know, pointing them to the point of exhaustion, but kind of like you said, you know, one of the players had a state of depression and it was waved off. One of the players had their dog taken away, right? Like stuff like that, where it was just a psychological warfare every day for these girls. It makes you question what type of not just all the actions, but what type of person Marlene Stallings is, right? Like how could you do this? And how could all of this had gone on in the first place? I think you're absolutely
and
right.
And to add to that, something that I think is we're fighting against continuously in this era is this idea, this culture of, you know, if you're not like you come to college athletics to work hard, you're going to be worked hard. And one of the main controversies of the story is that they have this new heart monitoring or this heart rate tracking system that has, you know, reviews across the board from multiple trainers. But the reality is that it can, you know, just show you how hard somebody's heart is working, not necessarily, you know, a parallel to their work ethic. But Stallings was using this and the trainer was using this to say like, hey, if you are not at 90% heart rate or above, you're not working hard enough. And if you don't make that line by the end of practice, then you're going to have to do conditioning to like... I guess the reasoning behind that is like, hey, to whip you into shape more or less, to make you work harder during practice. And Dylan hit it right on the head. I mean, mental health, like, it's easy to get behind now that there's been mass exposure all over the place. You know, sexual assault, sexual allegations, sexual harassment of any kind. Absolutely not. But there's still this like massive gray area where a lot of people are thinking, okay, you're transferring because you didn't get playing time. You're transferring because blah, blah, blah. But like we had this mass exodus of players because there was this toxic overworking culture that is truly having a negative impact on people's mental. And so like this is something that I hope that a lot of people will be looking at now and saying, okay, you know what? There's honestly a balance that needs to be struck between coach and player that does not affect them negatively, because that does nobody any good. I don't care how many wins, and we didn't even get that many wins. So it's like, it's just incredibly toxic.
So I will say, you bring up a good point about the transfers, right? So, and the reason, the point I can make here is that it's not like most of the team, especially this past season, were transfers into the program. It's not like these girls couldn't – it's not like this is their first rodeo with a program that works hard, right? It's not – so these players know what working hard is. It's not like they're coming out of high school and they just can't cut it in college and this, that, and the other, right? These players have been at other programs, have been at, you know, at UConn, at Kansas, at other programs, and know what a big-time practice is like, right? And so it's – that's where I think it is. It's not, they can tell when they're being abused. Like you can tell when you're being abused. If it's not like they're going to the AD and just whining and complaining, or it's not like they're going to, complaining to, I think it was in Kirby Hokut's interview today. I think he said it was, they complained to, one of the associate athletic directors. It's not like they're just going up to her and saying, oh, well, she just works as hard. They know when they're going a little bit too much. Now, I will say that little heart monitor thing, it's actually it's used frequently in soccer, right? So you'll see it a lot in actually all levels of professional soccer where they'll wear the heart monitor. I don't know how to explain it because it kind of looks like a bra, to be honest. But it's like a harness, I guess, and they wear it to test your heart monitor. And honestly, it is, a lot of times coaches do use it to see if players are being lazy on the pitch or if they're actually, you know, giving it their all during practice, things of that nature. The way Stallings was using it was a little more vindictive than how it usually is used, right? The way, like that 90% ranking of saying like, oh, if it's not 90% or above, you're not going to play or you're not going to, you know, or stuff like that, and making them just do things that you're not capable of just to even see the court was a little bit more vindictive than usually you see it done in basketball or in soccer or elsewhere. It's just, like I said, it was just some of the things that was going on in this, the way that she, you know, I think she was cited for calling some of the European players, you know, and verbally abusing some of the European players on there and calling them dangerous and things of that nature. It was weighing her
players in public and shouting their weights out loud and calling them fat pigs. Let's add that to the list too.
It's
some people like to brush past some of these details, and you just can't, because I promise you that's not okay. That's not normal in college athletics.
It's not. So let's talk about when Stallings first got to Tech, right? So let's talk about that first. So one big thing to talk about is when Stallings first got to Tech, she brought on two people with her. So the first one I'm going to bring up is a guy named Ralph Petrella. Now, Ralph Petrella was the former strength and conditioning coach And he was the one that was cited for the sexual assault using, he was using some type of therapy technique that involved touching the player's chest and groin and private areas and things of that nature. And the second somebody was, some of the girls went to administration and he was fronted about it. He said, you know what? I'm out. That kind of right there says that's a guilty man walking right there.
They launched an investigation on March 25th. He resigned on the 27th. Mostly because he knew after he resigned, Title IX couldn't investigate him anymore. In my opinion.
It's an admission of guilt. Yeah, basically what you're saying is that he said, I may not have this job anymore, but I don't want to go to jail.
Yeah. Resigning was an admission of guilt.
Well, so there's one, Ralph Petrella. And then there is also a Nikita Lowry Dawkins, who just got fired also. She's with as well as Marlene Stallings and some, more of the staff. She was also one of the rodents that got fired. Now, Coach Dawkins wasn't explicitly mentioned as far as the abuse goes. But however, she is a former New Mexico State head coach. While she was there, she also was fired for being an abusive head coach while there, including when a girl came up to her saying that she was having mental health issues, telling her anytime she has a suicidal thought to just snap a wristband on her wrist and call it a day. So one thing that's interesting about Nikita Lowry Dawkins is she was hired by Stallings, and also she was, her bio on TexasTech.com didn't include the New Mexico State portion of it. Basically meaning that Tech knew about it. They just wanted to, you know, kind of cover that up. So what do y'all think about not just Stallings' involvement of it, but the staff and her hiring of the staff around her?
I mean, it's just heinous. I mean, you know, the reality that Ahokka would allow Stallings to bring on Dawkins, that's a big error in my book. But we're talking about admission of guilt. I mean, the fact that they didn't even put that on her bio, where in a number of other sports, they put a ton of people's just random junk all the way back to whenever, where it's like, that doesn't really matter, but it's their bio. The fact that they admittedly omitted that is problematic. And that shows, you know, however high you want to bring it up, just a lack of communication between the fans, the staff, the administration. This is just a lack of transparency, which is problematic. That needs to, like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be at this level and you want to be, you know, champions, whatever, like, you have to have this open transparency between everybody. Like, you have to be able to say, you know, you have to be able to stand up to scrutiny of saying, okay, you brought on Dawkins, somebody who is an abusive coach. Why did you do that? Instead, I think they believe that they could get around that by just simply omitting that part of her life, which, if we've learned anything from history at all, omission does not make it go away. And it just reared its ugly head, and unfortunately, back onto us. And it's like, this is the consequence of you not bringing this forward immediately and dealing with this in a healthy way. So it's just problematic, and it brings a lot of distrust with me right now with the administration.
Interesting enough, just adding to this point, so Kirby actually was asked about Coach Dawkins in his press conference, which we're actually recording this half an hour after his press conference was live. He had mentioned that when they vetted her, that they had found that she was dismissed from New Mexico. I mean, I'm sure it's not hard to find this information, but how none of us knew is crazy. But they knew that she was removed from New Mexico State for physical and mental abuse. And he did say that it had been, I think, 17 years or something, and that she had actually been an assistant at Texas Tech in between this time. So interesting that we had hired her once before, knowing this, and then hired her again. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. It just stinks. It stinks.
Yeah. I just, so we start off with those two, the hiring of those two. And after that first year, she was, I'm going to start from the beginning of when she was here, because I was actually asked this question earlier today, which was, after the first year, she let eight students transferred out after that first year. Should that have been a red flag? And I'm going to ask both of you, should it have been a red flag from the beginning? And the reason I ask this is this. So Kirby was asked that again in his press conference, and he actually said that that is after that first year, he had a conversation with he was some after, or let me start over. After that first year, 8 people transferred out. Through those exit interviews, there was all types of negativity, all types of things talking about the program. He went, talked to Coach Stallings and showed her the exit interviews, had a conversation with the exit interviews, and made her promise that it would get better. Basically, you know, like when you have your yearly review with your boss and your boss says you suck. So that's basically how he made it seem. I was asked today, wouldn't that have been a red flag? And I said, honestly, at that time, and y'all tell me if I was wrong in saying this, at the time when all those transfers happened, there was a lot of it was because of all the new transfers that were coming in. So it wasn't a red flag to us as fans, because if you watched women's basketball program, you knew that Stallings had to make way for all the new talent she had come in. I mean, the Whitaker's talent wasn't any good. Stallings' talent actually looked to be pretty decent. And so that is the main reason for this transfer. So that was a way for us to kind of overlook the fact that there was something bad happening at the program. Was I wrong for thinking that? Was it, I mean, y'all, you know, so that status after that first year, was there anything that kind of brought a red flag to either of y'all?
I think it was so shrouded that there was no reason to cast any doubt. You know, I didn't think much of it either at the time, but when Kirby Hookut revealed that after year one, all these people had complained and there was already complaints of mental abuse, and it didn't seem like he was that interested in doing anything about it, maybe because we were winning or maybe because he believed that Marlene Stallings would do better the next year. And he even said by indication, things improved. So I don't know who was telling him things were improving, but he seemed to believe things were improving. But I think he Kirby Hookut got deceived, and we all should have saw red flags a year ago.
Yeah, so I think it comes down to the content of the exit interviews, because you guys are right. There is a lot going on at this time, and in a healthy, you know, in like a revitalizing a program, you're going to have a lot of people leave because you need to bring your people in. So if we're just, you know, at the time, I think a lot of me right now is just looking retrospectively, but I think at the time that's what it appeared to be. But, you know, depending on the content of what those athletes were saying on their way out, you know, if it was like, hey, you know, by the way, this is kind of an abusive coach, then that's a definite red flag. But if it was just, you know, non-detailed comments about, you know, just difficult environment or whatever, then Hookut doesn't really have a reason to believe that, you know, okay,
those exit interviews, they've been published. They were not general, vague, oh, this is just a negative program. It was very damning about the program in general.
The first years were? Okay, then for Hookut, it
wasn't necessarily direct, like, this is what she did. I don't think those really, I don't think any of that information came out till maybe even when the article published and the reporters actually went and did some digging. But it was definitely a lot of, this is the worst place ever. This is, actually, I could probably even bring up, if you want to comment on that, I could probably even bring up some of these interviews and what they actually said.
Yeah, I mean, which just goes to show kind of the murkiness of the whole situation, that it took USA Today to do personal like investigation to kind of bring the light, like, hey, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff going on here.
And not only that, it's been happening for a year right under our noses, and nobody in Lubbock had any clue except for Kirby Hookut, right. I guess.
Right, which is the most sickening part, I think, of it all. One of our other staffers brought up, you know, what is local media even doing? Like, what? Why doesn't our local media, like, dare to challenge, dare to, like, look into, dare to do anything that media should? It just, it's the very, you know, basic, I just feel like, blue-collar description of Texas Tech athletics with minimal digging at all and no effort besides just to get the base level that leaves us as fans out of the loop. And then stuff like this happens, and it's like, what the hell? Like, when did this become a thing? I think the shock of it is what hurts.
Very good point. So talking about the exit interviews, I just brought it up. So basically, in the exit interviews, you get to say whether your experience was you become a promoter, or passive, or a detractor. Basically, your overall experience, the head coach, position coach. Would you say that they're promoters, or, you know, you, do you get what that means? Like, as far as would you consider yourself, would you classify yourself as a promoter, passive, or a detractor? Of the position coaches, 86% of people that conducted exit interviews said they would be promoters of the position coaches, right? Actually, funny enough, Nikita Lowry Dawkins was one of the higher ones, right? Head coach, every single one's a detractor. Overall experience, every single one's a detractor. Every single one. When it came to it, as far as the one player, when asked to rate Stallings' character, one player said, by how she treats people, her character seems poor. Another one said, no morals, no integrity. She is a good coach on the court, X's and O's. I think she's smart, but basically just complete trashing her character. And a year later, in this most recent exit interviews in 2020, do something about the coaches so that my teammates don't have to continue suffering in silence.
And that says everything right there.
Yeah.
That's obviously someone who maybe stuck through 2 years of just awfulness.
And actually, not only that, after the article came out, a lot of ex-players was like, yeah, that's...
Not even Texas Tech players, but Minnesota players, where Marlene Stallings used to coach. They were all saying, oh, no surprise here. Same with players from VCU. So it really makes you question the vetting process, which Kirby Hoka also addressed. And he said, you know, he got nothing but glowing reviews for Marlene Stallings. So it's almost like, well, who are you talking to?
Exactly. Who are you asking?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's easy to say nothing but glowing reviews when you talk to maybe her boss or maybe,
Minnesota fans
or coworkers. But what about the people she's actually coaching? So that brings up a great point, Dylan. So I do want to talk about – it's time to talk about Kirby Hoka. Okay. Everybody, I think, on the Texas Tech fan base has no problems with Marlene Stallings getting fired. Or Marlene Stallings.
Not everyone.
Mostly because – mostly because, let's face it, most of the fan base, at least now in 2020, really doesn't care much about women's basketball. I'm one of the people that does, and I'm actually pretty excited about Marlene Stallings because I know you said there's not many wins, but the program was really turning around. Like, this program actually looked like it was on the up and up. So I do think there was, firing Stallings is saying that we don't care about the fact that the program is going better. So on one hand, I do think Kirby Hoka deserves a lot of credit, right? I do want to say that. He deserves a lot of credit. He made the right call in firing Coach Stallings less than 48 hours after the article came out. And a lot of people didn't think he would, right? I think he, from the timeline that he talked about, he said he was in communication with the players both Wednesday and Thursday, the whole entire day that the article came out. Apparently, after the exit interviews and he learned about it, he went and talked to Coach Stallings. There's a lot of good to see what Kirby Hoka did. However, to me, there's also a tremendous amount of bad, right? I will say the interview that he had today actually cleared up a lot of things, and I think it does make him look better than it did an hour ago. But there's a lot of bad in that. What is your assessment of how Kirby Hoka has handled this and handled other things like this, Dylan?
You know, I came on this podcast prepared to blast Kirby Hoka. And then I saw his press conference, and I really liked, he was genuine and pretty straightforward. And I think he did the best at conveying the information that he had without giving up too much, but I liked his transparency in his speech, and I think you're right in that he acted pretty quickly, I guess if you ignore the year that he saw red flags, but when the article came out 2 days later, she was gone. So he did the right thing in a very short amount of time, so I think he deserves some credit from that side of things, but it goes back to how did you vet this woman? You know, how did you make this coaching hire without knowing anything about how this woman apparently treated her players?
Yeah, this is difficult, right? Because on the one hand, you have an athletic director who has provided a lot for this university, professional representation. He was a part of the playoff committee selection process a couple years ago. He's given us, you know, a bunch of winning programs, but you can't say like that absolves him from problematic things like this. And so there's just this, it's very difficult for me to just talk about it because I don't know. You could just talk about this for hours in just a bunch of different directions. And I think the one thing that I've been sticking on, and Dylan's right. I mean, before, you know, an hour ago, I was like, hey, he hasn't said anything. It looks pretty damning. But after his conference, and of course, that professionalization, like the professionalism of his character in general, helped conclude a lot of things. But the one thing that stuck out to me in his interview was he said that when he went to go talk to the players, he still was not considering firing Stallings. But whenever he talked to the players before the staff, after that, he was like, yeah, she's got to go. And then ended up in that conversation with Stallings. She tried to say, you know, no, it's not how you're seeing it. You know, I don't agree with those allegations. Like, I feel like that's unfair. And Hocutt stood his ground and said, like, no, you're out. So there's something to say for like the redemptive characteristic. You know, he may have made a poor choice in the vetting process. He may have made a poor choice in not being more adamant or diligent about looking at those red flags, maybe if he saw them or didn't see them. But I will say that his ability to turn around, again, like Dylan said, is just a couple of days after the article came out and be like, you know what? No, no more. It just not a lot of dilly-dallying. So I appreciate that. But there's still, you know, there's questions to answer that I hope that he can grow from as an athletic director and then be able to prove that like he is the right athletic director for Tech.
Yeah. So one thing I will say from the press conference, this is the first time in Kirby Hocutt's career here at Texas Tech that his job has been challenged. He's been the best AD we've ever had, right? There's no question about that. He's brought on, with the exception of football, obviously, he's brought on winning programs over, even volleyball last year had a pretty good year. So he's never really had a challenge at Tech. He might as well give him a lifetime contract until now. Now, actually, one of the reporters in the press conference asked if he feels like he should still be the AD. And actually, if you see the press conference, you kind of saw him when he got to finally answering that part of the question, got a little testy. Like, kind of, you saw his voice rise up a little bit. And you know, because it's the first time his back, I would say, is more against the wall than it's ever been. Because now it's a question, not just of Stallings and the staff, but what the hell was the AD doing during that time that she was doing this? So a couple of things that stood out to me was that he was, again, one thing that was after the articles we came out from Viva was published, both the Viva article talking more about the USA Today article and then the breaking news one. One thing is that a lot of people came up and was asking, well, he didn't know. Well, hate to break it to you all, but he didn't know. Obviously, he's the athletic director. I would hope he would know. Actually, if Hocutt would have said he didn't know anything about it, I would have been more concerned, right? He knew. He was aware of the concerns of the first season. He said he did not know the magnitude of which it had occurred. Okay. And that, again, it kind of points to what Dylan said before is, well, who are you asking, right? But he said he didn't know the magnitude of what had occurred. And he said from then on, he would see it, and he thought he was going better, but it obviously hasn't. Another journalist asked, if it wasn't for the US Today article, because in the timeline, and I, anyone listening to this, I think you should listen to the press conference. In the timeline he talked about, he said that there was a meeting that was supposed to be scheduled in July with the staff and with the players, talking about the status of the program. And because he was still, even though he felt the program had gotten, the relationships had gotten better, he still didn't think it was at a decent place. Scheduled in July. There was a conflict. They had to push it back in the end of July. Then another player was having surgery, so they scheduled it for Wednesday the 5th, which is a little, but that's what he said. So he said it was scheduled for Wednesday, August 5th, which happened to be the same day the article came out. And our journalist asked them if they would have had the same type of conversation. He said he was not sure if they would have the same type of dialogue with the team as they did if the article had not come out, right? So it becomes, I really question, this is the first time I've ever questioned if I would let my daughter come and be a part of this athletic program. And I think another thing you have to ask yourself is that if all this was happening in a men's program, would it have got this far? Right? Like think about it. I just said this was worse than Gillespie. Gillespie was fired after a year. No questions asked for something that honestly wasn't as damning as this report. If this was a men's program, if this was football, if this was basketball, I mean, Coach Leach got fired because he put a James kid in the shed, right? If this was a men's sport, would it have been the same? And I do think that, as even though I do think there's some things you can applaud Kirby on, I think there's a lot more that you can, you need to hold his feet to the fire on. I do think that this press conference made me feel a little bit better about him, but it still didn't relieve me of everything that I felt before. I still think that there's a lot of that you have to ask himself about. That's now two head coaches that he hired and had to fire because of abuse. Right. There's not to mention, we haven't even talked about Jet Duffy and that whole situation. That's kind of been swept under the rug. Jet Duffy's situation, once I truly learned about it, is pretty sickening. And I think that Kirby should have his feet held to the fire as well in that one. So there's all these things where if it's so easy for us to look at Baylor and to look at Penn State and to look at all these other universities and say, oh, man, you're all the worst. How could you as a fan base stick up for him? And then something like this happens, and I go into the comments and I hear people saying, oh, well, how dare you talk about Kirby this way? He's the greatest AD we've ever had. In terms of wins and losses, of he damn sure is, but that doesn't mean anything when the women at the university feel in the way they feel.
Not if your wins are coming in an unsavory way.
Yeah, it's just it's absolutely ridiculous. I think I'm not going to say all the fan base. I think a lot of the fan base agrees with me and does have the same feelings. But a lot of the fan base is also looking at it as, oh, not our Kirby. Not Kirby. No. We have to back up Kirby as much as possible. And I don't give a damn who you are. Nobody is above this situation. I'm not saying Kirby should be fired or anything like that. But I do think his feet should be held to the fire. I do think, for the first time, you have to question, what is he doing, right? He said he went to practices and he went to the locker rooms after games, this and the other. So how could he still feel like the relationships were better, yet all the players were like, no, this is we're living in hell on earth.
Yeah, and I think fans should be open to, like you said, holding Kirby to the fire, because if he's a good AD, he will want that process as well, right? Like, nobody is done growing, and certainly not at that level of position. So I think we should definitely continue to ask him questions. Especially when they decide on who to hire next, there should be more questions asked about this person. There should be questions asked about, you know, how are you going to do this program going forward? What's your relation? You know, it's just, this is an excellent opportunity to grow in a lot of ways that he has not been tested on thus far. And I'm, you know, fan, that's fine, fans. If you want to keep Hoka, that's great. But he's going to have to grow as an AD, as a person, and as somebody who relates with all of these coaches in a way that stuff like this doesn't get swept under, doesn't get forgot, doesn't get overlooked.
I mean, if he wants to not deal with any of this, he can go to the pros. He can go be a GM somewhere. But as an athletic director, there's a lot more that goes in. When you're an athletic director at a university, you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds, right? Men and women. And the only one that feels like those are grown men and women are people that aren't 18, that haven't already lived the 18 to 22 year old period, right? Like these are at the end of the day, these are legal kids. That's what I like to look at them. There's a lot that they are going through at this period, and you still have to be able to help them grow. And when they're dealing in a hazardous situation like it is at Tech right now for that women's team for the last 2 years, that is on you to make sure that's not the case. And there's just a lot of red flags in this. And I think it's time we do look at Kirby a little bit more and more than just wins and losses. All right. I'm off my soapbox. I'm good. I'm calm. I got my, I got my blue moon light sky in me, you know, I'm good. Anything else you want to say, Dylan?
I think we've covered most of the bases. I kind of want to get back on the quick mental health issues, and just, I want to say to the people out there who don't understand it, talk to people who do. I know it's hard to understand it if you've never been in that place, but please educate yourself, because I promise you what was happening in regards to just the mental abuse was wrong.
Look, actually, I'll say, you know, I'm glad you said that, Dylan. I was one of those people. Actually, I kind of still am. Like, I still don't get it, to be honest. I'm not somebody who has ever really dealt with a lot of like mental health issues. And I very well used to be one of those people that like, hey, just, you know, just don't deal with it. You know, just sleep it off. Just this, just that, you know, mind over matter, all this other stuff. But, you know, you surround yourself, you listen to people, you listen, like my wife's not one of those people. She is 100% gets anxiety, gets a lot of the other things. I had another friend who, I want to put his business out there, but he had his girlfriend he'd been dating for a while that was, he was thinking about marrying. She ended up being manic and was bipolar. And so she had her manic side and all this other stuff. And we both learned a lot about that as well. So like, it's, as somebody who is one of those people that didn't understand it at all, still don't really understand it fully, but, you know, can do this thing called empathy and just understand that if somebody says they're going through something, understand they're going through something. That's really all it is to it, you know, and kind of try to understand as best as they can. And if you don't understand, just believe them. Really as simple as that, right? It's not that hard, people. Just don't be a DBAD.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a...
There you go.
That's really...
I don't think I have to mark it. I don't think I have to mark the podcast as explicit because I said dick, but I don't know.
Jeremy?
Yeah. How can one follow up DBAD? I think if I just have a parting word on, you know, this whole situation is that anytime there's any degree of pain, you know, there's always an excellent room for growth. I just hope that maturity wins the day, you know, with fans. Just don't take one side or the other immediately. Always be cautious about the facts. Stand up for what is right. And, you know, don't be afraid of change. Like, hey, if Hocut sucks, get him out of there. And put somebody who has character in there, you know, because at the end of the day, wins and losses as a university that never overshadows humanity, right? Like, we have to care for people as people and athletes as athletes or athletes as people, you know, everybody is people. So as long as we can just continue to strive for that, you know, strive for honor, all of that stuff, you know, I think this university is headed in the right direction. But we got to start, you know, there's going to be moments like this and we just have to hit them head on.
Also, guess what, people? You can have both. You can have the wins and a person with high character. There is such thing. You can have both, right? Like, let's face it, Baylor fired Art Briles and they were rewarded with an even better season a couple years later, right? Like, you can have both, right? Coach Beard has showed us that. I mean, Coach Beard is a man of very high character and is winning games. That actually, honestly, if something happened with Coach Beard, that would hurt me. That would have, like, legitimate. I met the guy. I would
stop watching sports.
That would legitimate.
Well, Coach Beard is a perfect example of you can be a tough coach and still care about your guy's mental fortitude and mental health.
That's a
4-1.
That's a great example. Like, I mean, you can do both. You don't have to be a hard ass. And then we actually might have to make this explicit. I don't know. My bad. But you don't have to be a hard A. And then, right, to get your players to dig in. We don't need Bobby Knight. We don't ask Indiana fans about Bobby Knight, right? He tamed down when he got the text. So we don't hate him as much. But you don't have – he won him a national championship, but they hate the guy, right? You don't have to be that way. We can have both. All right, we're actually going to talk about other stuff on this episode, but, this was a very hot topic, and I'm glad it took up the entire podcast episode because it was necessary. Y'all have already said your piece. Follow us on Twitter at Air Raid Podcast. Also follow the home team at Viva the Matadors. For Dylan, for Jeremy, this is Albie. As always, stay wrecked, people.